Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
God, Monday morning. How are you two?
Alhamdulillah,
thank you.
Alhamdulillah. We survived another weekend on the right side of the ground. What you know good? Before I throw out the news of the day, tell me what you know good. What you know
good. I'll let Samatula start it off there.
Okay. I had some couple of points from previous weeks that we had a lot of activity going on. Hopefully, the future will have a program. I'm looking at maybe in June or July on immigration, because I think this whole issue of what's going on at the southern border is something that we need to address. And as Muslims, the idea of immigration, you know, our calendar is based on the immigration of the Prophet and his community to Medina from Mecca. So I thought it would be good in the future for us to talk about the whole immigration issue. And currently there are a group of parents through civil rights and humanitarian organizations who are suing the government because of the implementation of the administration of Mr. Trump with the separation of the parents and the children at the border. So that has placed the Department of Justice in a position of having to try and defend Trump's policy. So that should, in future weeks and months, be an interesting case for us to follow. So that's something that was on my mind. Fleming, you have something?
All right. I guess my one statement is, don't always believe the hype. And what I'm talking about is this episode of us being concerned about the debt ceiling the last 2 weeks. Yeah. All of a sudden it was resolved. And those of us that know a little bit about economics knew that this had to take place. But if you'd gone on with the hype, you would have believed that the country's going to fall apart. You know, no Social Security checks would have been issued. The veterans would be paid. All of that hype was put out there to put focus on that issue. But I think our job as balanced presenters, people who are balanced in our perspective on reality, we should always look for the essentials and not follow the hype. I don't care which party you're talking about. We should never just repeat political bites, I call them. We should always try to deal with the facts and be straightforward in our analysis. I'm really encouraged that indeed that issue was resolved. It's just I'm always a little cautious when there's so much emotional hype put into a political discussion, because usually the hype is just a facade and doesn't really give you actual facts. And if you notice in this whole discussion, there was no specific discussion of how does this whole fiasco impact the average citizen. You know, that was sort of a last minute kind of brought up, but even then it was not in any kind of detail. So as we look at this political, you know, toxic environment, let's just stay tuned. Don't go for the hype. Check out the facts and make your own critical decision on what's really going on. Here on the East Coast, of course, a lot of things happening. We are on our way to D.C., of course, on the 12th and 13th, inshallah, to present issues and concerns that we have as an organization to the senators and the representatives. We have about 400 delegates as a part of the United States Congress of Muslim Organizations effort. I'm looking forward to that. On a personal note, my grandbaby is graduating in Maryland from high school on her way to New York City to go to design school. She's into fashions. So I'm leaving, inshallah, Wednesday to go to her graduation, then continue my journey to D.C. So good news. We got 2 hours this morning, a lot of lesson revision. So alhamdulillah, have another chance to make a difference, to improve humanity and do my part to move humanity forward. Thank you very much.
We've had a rough couple of weeks. I think that a lot of not only hype about the debt ceiling, but also, Sister Marcela, the on your note about the immigration, with a busload since here to California that AG Bonta is dealing with, trying to figure out who did what when, right? Up until now, you know, this trick of using human beings as a tool in this game of what to do about immigration has been to ship busloads of human beings to different states to try and prove a point about the immigration system rather than actually have a plan on immigration has just fallen into California's hands. And so the busload of immigrants that were shipped to California these last couple of days has been met with a wide range of opinions, and none of them have been solution-based, right? No one has looked at it and saw that this political ploy is involving the lives of actual human beings, not a chess game. And people who were fed a ploy to advance the agenda of a bunch of individuals who want to get attention. So I think that that's the first thing, is what is the end game that we're trying to do with the immigration policy? What you mentioned, Brother Fleming, about the debt ceiling is, how do you have a debt ceiling when you got a printer in the back to make your money? I'm just saying. And on top of that, the whole premise of a debt ceiling is kind of inane when it's like, if one of you go out and buy your car or you buy your house, and then 8 months later you say, oh, you know what? Psych, I don't want to pay that bill. I was just playing when I bought that car. I won't pay it now. This is what this debt ceiling is. Most people don't understand that the debt ceiling comes after. The talks about, you know, the debt ceiling came after you already committed to the bill, right? You committed to these bills last year. Last year. The body was passed last year. This isn't about that. This is a shell game. If the listeners know what a shell game means, you know, those con men, I don't want to say con men, I don't like that, but the confidence, people who stand on the corner who have those boxes and they put the little shell under one of those cups, and then they tell you to follow it, and then you pick it up and there's nothing under it. That's what that is, because you've already passed the budget. The same people who passed this budget multiple times under the former president now want to come and tell you to do something different. But you're the ones who passed it. It passed without question over the last 6 years. Now you want to come back and say it's too much. Because this is just, yes, it's hype, but it's also gamesmanship, right? So I think that it would behoove most people, as we've talked about before, to do some education. So Cesar Muscle, I think one of the things on our agenda or prospective programs is to really go into what, you know, an educational process on what this really means. So people have a greater understanding of not just a debt ceiling, but what goes into this budgeting and what are they really arguing about? Because if you've ever been to D.C., and Elamine, you know this, the same people you see on television pretending to fight with each other are sitting around eating steaks and drinking beer behind the scenes, laughing at all of us for thinking that they don't like each other.
Precisely.
They're all getting funding. If you want to do some quick research, you can go online and see, look at their Form 700s. You can go online and look at their reportables, and you will see that many of them, doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, Independent, they're all getting paid. They're all getting donations, many of them from the same entities. So while we're sitting around fighting each other because you declare yourself with an R or D behind, or an I behind your name, the people who are making the decision, those are influenced, they are somewhere getting money behind the scenes from the same people.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we are drowning in student debt, too high mortgages. The rent is still too daggone high. People are saddled with real debt. Now, forget that debt ceiling. I got my own debt ceiling. I don't know about you two, but my debt ceiling is about to come through the tiles on my Spanish tile house. That roof about to come down because my debt ceiling is for real. I don't have no printer in my basement. I don't know about you two, but I have a debt ceiling. I got a debt ceiling, a debt floor. Go ahead.
Did have a printer in your basement, you might have to have a free Cheryl campaign.
A free Cheryl campaign? Yeah. I wouldn't tell nobody, though. I wouldn't tell nobody.
Mary Garland and the guys would be after you, but which is another area, you know, the whole thing in Better Filming, I think we probably rely on your expertise to a great extent. The whole, like you were saying, you know, having a realistic view of the economic system and how that is playing out with the political system, you know, a lot of criticism that looking at the whole theatrics of this process, some of the stations reported that, you know, the far left of the Democratic caucus, that they felt that Biden, he gave up a lot by saying he wasn't going to negotiate and then negotiating. And the people on the far right, they weren't happy because they felt that not enough money was actually cut out of the budget proposals that they came to. So going back to Cheryl's point as far as gamesmanship, a lot of the gamesmanship was on negotiation with Biden putting out there that he wasn't going to negotiate on the debt ceiling, but that he was willing to talk about the budget in a parallel discussion. So I think that is confusing, possibly, for people to understand also, because the actual budget process, when we get into that, what will be the next chapter of this, you know, this theater that we're seeing. And so where we may feel that, okay, a bullet was dodged with this, what the next chapter of the, you know, the series of political drama that we're going to see. And will we as everyday striving, poor, working individual citizens of this country, will we really have a clear picture of what's going on Capitol Hill and these people that we have elected to represent us? Will they actually be doing any governing that benefits the citizenry? And so I think that that's a big idea or a big reality that we need to look at and work on informing ourselves and our listening audience also.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I know we have some guests who have to work at 1 o'clock and they're going to wait until we call them on. But let me say this very quickly. Most of those representatives, senators and congressmen, don't read the full budget. A lot of it comes out of committees. Those committees are supported by very standing departments in government. Some are not standing. But the main request comes up in that vehicle, from that range of requests. And there's always a simple way to follow that. Where's the money coming from and who's it going to? We just had a huge rally in North Carolina down at the General Assembly over the budget they're trying to pass in North Carolina under the disguise of expanded Medicaid. But along with that, teacher salaries being cut, voting rights being jeopardized. In fact, so we called it the Trojan War budget under the pretense of expanding Medicare. And it requires some reading and some research. And most of these guys who voted for it, as I said, this is on a state level, they have not read that budget, but they're told by the political leaders, support this, support that. don't support this, don't support that. And they follow that domain of reasoning instead of following how does this really impact my constituents who are relying on me to do what's best in their interest. So there's some work to be done. Hopefully we'll have a session just on, you know, economics and how this whole budget process works. But I was just reflecting back on what Cheryl said about having that debt floor and debt ceiling. In my house, I have debt walls, debt ceilings, debt basements. Every time I look around this 2 acres of land, I see a debt somewhere. Even my little garden, I got some debt right now, some tomato plants I got to go put out there. But that concept of debt, for the average person, we know. You buy a car, you got to pay the bill off. You buy a house, get a mortgage, you got to pay the bill off. You know, you buy some appliances in your house, you got to pay for that. You can't get away with saying, well, I bought it, but I'm going to renege on the payment. Somebody will knock on your door and say, well, I think you owe this back to the person you said you're going to pay for it. That's a whole different reality, and that's what most of us experience. We don't have this debt ceiling opportunity. And collectively, that $33 trillion, brothers and sisters, that's been accumulating for a number of years. I won't go into the details, but that's not a one-year activity. It takes a number of years. The president's gone all the way back to Carter, even, to sort of get involved in doing that concept. So one day we'll have a chance to really go through it in more detail, you know, inshallah, going forward. But I know we have some people that are on their jobs. I think this young man by the name of Abraham Malik Elamin out of Denver, Colorado, he's literally at work waiting to come on. So I'm going to ask him to come on, show his hand, raise his hand. It's a 575, every code is 336. So we can go ahead and get this program started on civic engagement, past, present, and future, and how it impacts our career opportunities. Cheryl?
Well, we have a 503. We have a 503 number. Is that it?
503 is the area code?
I think that's a Colorado number.
Okay. Very well could be.
That's an Oregon number.
Yeah, that's right. It is Oregon.
Is that you, ma'am?
Okay.
Good morning.
Shabbat?
Yeah.
Imam Shabbat,
okay.
Is that you?
Well, we welcomed him to the show because I just took him off mute.
Yes, we do. Welcome, 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 Imam Shabbat.
Good morning. Good morning, sir.
503-705. We welcome you to the program. Did you have a comment or a question? No, I think that he's just dialing in. Okay.
All right,
okay.
I'll mute it. All right, then. Yeah, there's a sequence. Hopefully Abraham will call back in if he's not already online. And then there will be a 336 number from Scott Abdul Salam, who's a fantastic community activist and an entrepreneur. He wears several different hats. He has a foundation called Scott Cares Foundation that provides scholarship to kids who want to go into technical fields. That's just one of his many, many hats that he wears in the community. And he supports his wife, who's just opened up a bakery, and he's the number two guy in terms of baking the food in the bakery. So a wonderful brother who's done a lot for the community. He used to work with Imam Muhammad years ago in some capacity. So I'm looking forward to his contribution this morning on AM 360 here. While they're waiting to call in, inshallah, we can make a few comments on the past impact of civic engagement for our community. And many of you know that this goes back to even pre-slavery dates. In fact, I did one article over the weekend. I was looking at what they call the Atlantic slave trade. I usually look at Kenneth Stamp's book entitled The Peculiar Institution, and they document how many mothers basically gave their lives instead of coming to America and just went over those ships in some cases because they didn't want to confront this unknown world with a new life. And so when you think of civic engagement, you think about things that impact the quality of your life that you want to have some influence on. Those things that impact the quality of your life that you want to have some influence on. And that always goes beyond the four walls of your house. So if you want to be civically engaged, you got to be involved in matters that impact the broader community. But I looked at that very closely because in that same book, it talks about how some of these cruel conquistadors would actually take a pregnant Indian and tie them and then literally cut their stomach and take the baby out and beat the baby against rocks to kill the baby in front of the mother while she was going through that trauma just to prove that indeed their skin color was more superior. I mean, that type of savage treatment is something our people went through. And then those that survived that horrible experience of chattel slavery came to the Americas. Most of them had to go down to the colonies first, what we call the Caribbean now. It wasn't called that then, to go into what was referred to as factories. What do I mean by factories? These were institutions set up to make them think they were less than human. They were beaten. They were subjected to all kind of cruel treatment to make them submissive, because it's not a natural thing to submit your will to someone else's will. And after being trained through that process, some came up to the Americas. The majority did not come to America, brothers and sisters. The majority went over to South America, in Brazil, Portugal, et cetera, primarily Brazil. And that's why if you go to Brazil today at some of the festivals, you'll see a huge influence of African culture in Brazil today. But those who came up to America, they here experienced, you know, centuries of chattel slavery, which is so unimaginable today in our, you know, cognitive thought pattern, to be looked upon as an animal or less than an animal and with no human dignity at all. So this concept of civic engagement, it has a rich history. It's a process that you should engage in to improve your quality of life. You can't pass the buck to someone else. And you know the struggle that we've gone through. Finally, in this country, you have something called the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment to give some dignity to former slaves or enslaved people, which is a term I prefer to use. And even with that, that was a struggling process. People resisted that. And so you had this president by the name of Rutherford B. Hayes, who made a deal with the Southerners, who said, look, we'll take all those federal troops out of the South if you'll cast your vote to support me for the presidency. What happened shortly after that? What we call today the Ku Klux Klan, Jim Crow, Susan Crow, all those elements that institutionalized segregation came into existence because they reinstituted their way of life to keep our people subjected. It's just one level above slavery called the sharecropper's immorality. And that is an institution sometime maybe we'll look at in more detail. But they were struggling during that era, trying to get some kind of human dignity. And so finally, through all of that, you know, we have fast forward 1965 Voting Rights Act. And even that has been challenged recently, because if you can't vote, you don't really have a voice. If you don't vote, you don't really have a voice in government decisions. You may think you do. But unless that representative, you know, asks for your opinion or asks for your participation, and they look at their little books to see who voted for them, if they don't identify you as a constituent, they don't give you the kind of attention they would for someone who's actually in the voting process. So voting is your representation of your influence in your local government, in your state government, and especially on your federal level. And, you know, I've written a few papers entitled From Picking Cotton to Picking Presidents, and what our people went through to get to that point with the election of President Barack Hussein Obama. Let me pause there. Do we need to take a station break right now, Sister Cheryl, or what do you think?
Yes, sir. I have 2 minutes. I got 2 minutes. Well, Sister Martha, go ahead, and then we'll take one. Did you have a comment?
No. I was going to say it'd probably be good to take a break.
Let's go. No problem.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, because there is no God but the one God.
family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. CWSC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, invites you to join us every Tuesday, 8 p.m. to 4 p.m. for CARE on Air. That's the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Our American Muslim 360 host is Edward Ahmed Mitchell, attorney and deputy director. Edward Ahmed Mitchell is an attorney and former journalist who serves as the deputy director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization in the United States. Join us every Tuesday and Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Martha Naila Abdullah, Executive Director for CWSC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference. With God's name, the Merciful Benefactor, the Merciful Redeemer. We are openly acknowledging that God is one, that there are absolutely no partners with God, and that Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be upon him, is a servant and messenger of the one God. Through his example, we are able to live in this time, 450 years beyond the time of enslavement here in the United States of America. Proactively and from the mercy of the Almighty, we stand with the human family that Juneteenth is a reminder of what once was and how we can take a stand and be a contributing factor to the human family for the best of humanity, continuing to strive with the excellence that our foreparents stood with and for, many who lost their lives because they chose not to be subdued and treated inhumanely. Juneteenth, again, is as a soul arising by the mercy of the one God. And now, welcome, dear human family, to Juneteenth 2021.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
And we are back, sir. Just wanted to remind all of us that we do have Juneteenth coming up in a couple of weeks, but also this month, in coordination with the fact that it is June, is, you know, last month we had Mental Health Awareness Month, and this month coincidentally, is PTSD month. I call it PTSS month, post-traumatic slave disorder month. But, yeah, it's quite fitting. Now that we have all of this stuff going on with the dead and everything else, immigration and all of the other things we've been talking about today. So we have a 702 number, sir. Is that the number we're looking for?
What's the first three digits again?
So, 403. You may want to remind guests that if they would like to call in, they can call in at 515-605-9891 and push the number one on your keypad. That will raise your hand and let us know that you would like to speak. But back to you, sir.
All right. Thank you very much, Sister Cheryl. And I just want to echo just a comment very quickly about this immigration catastrophe. You know, when I saw someone put those immigrants on an airplane and fly them into California, you know, and then release them into an environment that had no idea they were coming, quite naturally my spirit went out, you know, to say, how dare you treat people like that, like herds of cattle, with no regard for what happens to them once you drop them off like that. And that mindset is going to have to be addressed and held accountable for, to mistreat people on that scale as if they were chattel slaves. In fact, it's just one step beyond that, the way they're treating these people. So that issue has to be addressed. And it sort of dovetails into the second part of our theme for today, which is the present application of civic engagement. You know, there's a lot of insanity, I would say, on the TV these days about people doing certain things to stop people from reading books and taking pride in that, stop people from being, as they say, woke and taking pride in that, to deny people a right to even study their own history and taking pride in that, as if this country needs that element to make this a United States of America instead of a divided America. And all kind of extreme perspectives are very relevant today on TV, coming from people who see that as, quote, what the Americans want or what the American people want, which is absolutely misrepresentation. And I was on a discussion yesterday with the American Coalition for Good Government on coming with a rapid response team to address some of these issues, because it dominates the media right now, whether it's a quote on the social media, recording something that's been said by some of these extremists, or a TV ad, or an actual report from a major station echoing what some of this insanity is all about. Because nobody's talking about unity. They're talking about division, and even worse than that, taking rights of people back that they fought for many years to have the right to express themselves today in their vote. But a lot of this present activity, brothers and sisters, we have to have our strategy to impact that. And one fundamental strategy, you've got to register people to vote. Now, you can do all the talking you want. You can strategize all you want to. But if you don't have the numbers to show up at the poll to vote some of these people out of office, then you're almost working in vain to a great degree. But you've got to magnify our effort. We're doing a program in North Carolina again called Take Five. And Take Five basically says you got to fire five people that you know that are not registered to vote. You take the responsibility of registering them and showing them where the Board of Elections is and where the precincts are. You work with them. You try to encourage one of those five to do the same thing for five more. But it's a very simple process, but a very meaningful one and an impactful one. Take Five, sponsored by ACGG. I'm sorry, Sister Amatulu, you were going to say something, but I cut you off. It was not intended.
No. It was good. It was. I appreciated the point that you made about woke, and it brought to mind, I've been reading in a book, Spilling the Beans, a book for the world, and which has a collection of different essays and little short stories. And the first essay, when Ron DeSantis was in, I think it was in Iowa, and he was talking about how Florida is where woke comes to die. I reflected back on this first essay. I just want to take a a few seconds to read it, and it's called Waking Up. The author says, waking up is not an absolutely quick process. Always remember, a person doesn't wake up all of a sudden. No matter how fast we wake up, we must do it in stages. Everyone in the room knows that the sleeping one is waking up before the sleeping one does. No matter who we are, we have to walk one step at a time. We see the dawn before we see the bright sun. I see all of these wonderful people waking up. At last, at last, at last, it appears that the beginning of the new world is here. The chance of a lifetime is here. Never allow your enemy to train you. And be careful so that you don't become a watchman for the boss. Education indeed costs a lot, but being uninformed and or being misinformed costs much, much more. Discover. Remove the cover. Yay, waking up is fun. So when you said woke, that took my mind back to that essay, and it's so true that word is being used by the extreme right, and DeSantis is using it as one of his rallying calls for the fascist and inhumane and illegal, unconstitutional actions and legislation that he has provoked his Republican majority legislature to pass there in Florida. And it's also what they call a dog whistle or code language, because he knows that the people who are trying to get people to wake up on these social justice issues, that it has an entirely different meaning from the meaning that they have ascribed to it. And also, I want to just draw another connection with what we have mentioned in the past, Brother Fleming, and we've talked about it, and it goes to your last point in terms of the whole voter suppression and whatnot. All of these things are connected, and they're all being orchestrated through an organization that we mentioned, several organizations, but one, the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEX, is its acronym, which is fostering all of this extreme legislation that from voter suppression to the cultural, to the anti-woke legislation that we've seen in the various states. And I think what is important for people to realize is that all of this is orchestrated. You know, it has been planned out. How do they plan to get what they want in order to maintain and gain power in the different states and in the different states in the legislatures, and then when you come on the federal level, in the court system, in the Supreme Court, all of this has been planned and patiently executed. And so if you're not paying attention, you'll wake up one day and you'll see all of this happening and you think that, oh, this must be normal, you know, this must be the way that our country should go, because we see all of this activity that seems to be in the same direction and those who have been locked out from the system by the gerrymandering at the state level so that the minority can actually rule and override a majority opinion. And then when you see that in the federal halls of power with the Congress and with the Senate, and then you have the media, the corporate media outlets that are just echoing. You mentioned earlier, Brother Fleming, about, and I think Sister Cheryl mentioned it, about, oh, how, you know, the end of the world is here, you know, the country, the government, the debt ceiling, and all of this fear and anxiety is stirred up in the population so that people who are not paying attention, they will just tune all of that out, turn all of it off, not pay attention, They'll spend more time on social media looking at funny things, looking at cat videos, looking at things that are not directly impacting their life because they've been put to sleep by those who have planned to put us asleep. And through our programming, we'll be able to make people more aware of what's going on around us in this environment. And that was more than I probably should have said, but your thought, what you said, sparked a lot in my thinking. So I'll turn it
back
over.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Very insightful. I know some of us remember when the Watergate, you know, event happened. The common theme out of that whole episode was follow the money. And if you follow the money of the scientist, who is financing his campaign? You know, you'll see who's really behind him when you do that. I don't care who the representative is. You look at their financial statements or their contribution statements and see who's donating money to their campaign. That really gives you an idea who they represent. And I don't care who the candidate is. That's a detailed analysis you can do. It's public information. But I've looked at some of those, you know, reports, and I think some people would be shocked to see that there's some corporations behind this foolishness. The scientists would never have had the nerve to challenge Disney, the biggest employer in the state of Florida. Just think about that now. Your biggest employer, you want to challenge their operation in that kind of, you know, manner if you didn't have support behind him doing that. And, you know, there's an appetite in this country for Mickey Mouse. I don't want to downplay it, but people perceive that as, you know, the wonderful world kind of stuff. They already have a market share. And so they, you know, they're suing him, of course, on First Amendment rights violations. But just think about it now. You're a governor of a state, and because of your political outlook, you want to challenge your number one contributor in the state when it comes to employing people. It makes no common sense. So I would suggest any of us in the listening audience, check out who's financing these people. And I could go down a list of people who, you know, there's some very conservative think tanks like Alex and there are others. There's two billionaires in the state of Texas who finance a lot of these conservative agendas, but they have a specific plan, as our sister just said, and they're implementing their plan. And they will have 15-year plans. In fact, one group I looked at the Supreme Court, they had a 20-year plan to change the Supreme Court into what we have today. So even though the tweeter gets credit for putting those people on there, he was just carrying out what they had started years ago, even in the time of Thurgood Marshall, because they didn't like the way that the social environment was changing to make it more equitable and to make it more accessible and to give rights to people they had earned. And so the whole gist of the matter, they want a minority of them to control the majority. I'll repeat that again. They want a minority of them to define their own districts so they can control who can vote for them, so they can control, indeed, the majority of people. And we have to be wide awake to that strategy and counter it to the best of our abilities. It's either money or votes that makes a difference in politics. So our greatest asset, of course, is encouraging people to get out there and register people to vote on a large scale to hold these people accountable. And we have a list here from Common Cause that identifies every one of our state legislators who voted for this recent budget I referred to. And the tricks they try to use to deceive people, that's what's really so disgusting. You know, they're not being transparent. They're making deals behind closed doors. They want to come out and say, this is good for you because we said it was good for you. That insults my intelligence to the ninth degree. And I think any of us who are, you know, concerned about civic engagement, we should feel insulted too. If you want my participation, engage me in the conversation and the planning. You know, we're grown adults with thinking capacities, and we can make decisions on what's best for me. Don't go behind closed doors and then come out with your master plan about my life. And that's the trend taking place, unfortunately, now in a lot of these political circles, because they're really not being challenged at this state in any kind of serious manner. And I'm faulting some of these established parties for not being stronger advocates for another way of thinking about this whole government as we go forward. I happen to have some friends who are libertarians in the Green Party, and at least they are in the public saying something. I can't say the same for some of these other parties, which disturbs me a little bit too. But those elements, brothers and sisters, are all reflections of what our current present level of civic engagement can produce for us. And we should know that just civic engagement is critical. We can no longer stand on the sideline and critique. We've got to be players on the field participating, because the foundation of a participatory democracy is people participating. And that's why you have this serious onslaught of people trying to reduce that so they can control who actually participates in government. There's a wealth of papers that have come out, and people have written books, especially from that tweeter and what he tried to do to destroy America. And he's back on the scene again. Even though he's been charged with everything under the sun from A to Z, there's still a population of people who see him as their, quote, I hate to even use that word, it's the right man to vote for. I just feel that kind about it. But they see him in almost a spiritual context. And they're the ones I would consider blind and need to be woken up. But I didn't mean to get into that vein in our discussion.
I think it's very important because, like you said, it's almost like he tapped into the evangelical movement, and they have now come to almost, most people describe it as a cult-like presentation with his whole persona and campaign, so that he put out there when he first campaigned in 16, I think it was, that if he shot somebody dead in the middle of the street, I don't know if he said Broadway or somewhere,
Times Square.
That his supporters would still, you know, support him. So now you got to think, that's a pretty bold statement to put out there, but some way he tapped into the fear of that group. And I think if we look at it, let's tie something in with immigration and the fear and the power that you were talking about, Brother Fleming. If you notice,
yes,
the country opened its arms for when there was this migration of the Ukrainians, when the Russians first attacked and people were being forced to leave Ukraine. And so many countries in the world, in Europe and here in America, we opened our doors. I should say the leaders of this country opened the doors in terms of relaxing immigration requirements and granting asylum to those people who came. Fine, beautiful. I have nothing against that, except that here we see where inequality and racism actually raises its head again. Now, when it comes to our southern borders, they are afraid that the immigrants coming in from the south, from Mexico, from the Central American and the South American countries, and those coming from Haiti, that this will, if these people were to come in and if they were to gain citizenship, this is where that fear of the great replacement theory comes in. So we have to look, I think, people use the term holistically almost as a cliche now, but I would say if we take and draw back and look at the macro view of what's going on, that all of these things are coming into play because of the power hungry base of the Republican Party that essentially want Caucasian people to maintain the power in this country, to benefit from the labor and the hard work of the working poor, primarily those who do not look like them, those who come and who reflect what that Statue of Liberty says out there off of the where Ellis Island was or is, to give me your poor, okay? No, they don't want that poor to come in. If it's the poor that looks like them, Caucasian people, that can increase their power base politically, that's fine. But people of color, as they say, black people, Hispanic people, indigenous people, they don't want that. And like you said, we have to start planning and implementing a plan for regaining a lot of the power that we have lost through the gerrymandering and the political shenanigans of this right, extremist right, white nationalist, because that's what it is, white nationalist thought and leaders in this country that have influence to take the country away from the fundamental foundation belief of all men, meaning men and women, are created equal, and the inalienable rights that we have as Allah has created us, that we have these rights to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And they don't want to see that. They don't want to see that for people that don't look like them. And so that's it. Sister Cheryl, I'm sorry I took up some of your time. You go right ahead.
It's okay. I think that from my side, I just want to take a step back. Because I think it's more than just it's definitely one of the political parties more than the other, but I tend to take a kind of an eagle-eye view. It's the entire political system, and I want to bring, and so let me know if our, we do have a Sister Maxwell, can you find out who the 111 number is? And maybe one of our guests. Sometimes we get that number when they're calling from us. Not in line. But I want to bring up, there's a phrase that you mentioned, Brother Fleming, about woke. And this phrase, I want to bring our audience into this discussion about the term woke. Because over the years, it's been used, it's been changed from a concept that has symbolized like awareness of social issues and this movement that has been about injustice and prejudice and inequality, and it has become almost a pejorative, right? And what a lot of people don't know is this is not a new term. It goes all the way back to the 40s. It was popularized in the 60s. I mean, it well predates me. But I did my research on this years ago when some people credited it to Alice Walker, because she mentioned it in one of her writings, but it's not credited to her. It came out in a writing, in a couple of essays. I know even Dr. King used it, Dr. King Jr. It was in a William Melvin Kelly essay. But it goes back something years in the Negro Digest, when Saunders Redding wrote an article about labor unions, and then of course that famous New York Times article about if you're woke, you dig it. That Mickey Mouse can't be expected to. So, you know, Negro idioms about being hip. And then Dr. King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., used it in being awake through the Great Revolution in his 65 Oberlin College speech. He said something, it was really about, he didn't use the word woke. He said, there's nothing more tragic than to sleep through a revolution. The wind of change is blowing, and we see in our day and our age a significant development, the great challenge facing every individual graduating today is to remain awake through this social revolution. So this concept of being awakened and being woke is just about being awake and not sleep. And the way that these writers, mostly white writers, of our so-called dictionaries, and even the black writers of the Urban Dictionary, took that to mean being aware of the truth. But now, as with most things, when the majority community takes hold of our words, they I'm going to use the word, bastardize it, and it becomes a pejorative. When the Oxford Dictionary, they expanded it, and they took it from being aware of the truth to an alert to injustice in society, especially racism. That's not what it is. Those are two different things. Being aware of the truth and an alert to injustice in society, especially racism, is not the same thing. Those aren't the same thing. That is why you have a lot of non-black, non-brown, non-Muslim, non-immigrant people on the ropes and being so afraid and not liking the word woke, because there are a lot of Jewish people, a lot of impoverished white people also should be aware of the truth. A lot of them are being affected by some of these budget cuts, some of these new things in these new so-called laws that are being put down that say that if you're under the age of 65, you must, or 57, I believe, that if you are on social assistance, you must be working. The vast majority of people who are on social assistance in many states are not black. They are not brown. They are not immigrants. They are impoverished white people. So it is not fair to say that the word woke means is only dealing with racism. It's also dealing with classism. Is also dealing with impoverishment. And so that's why you have a DeSantis. That's why you have a chump, I say what I say, running around. This is why you have, you know, these governors and these senators and these congressmen from these states able to pull the wool over people's eyes and make these statements that are simply not true, because they have taken a word and they've given it the wrong meaning. And what we are supposed to be doing is correct, not just playing defense so much, it's playing offense, not just registering people to vote, but making sure they actually vote. But state, we have to tell our own story. We have this platform in 360, in AM 360, and we have this show, and we have so many other shows where we should be telling our own stories. We should be playing offense to also play defense. I see we have some callers on the line. Again,
yes.
We will, let's get to our guests. But if we have callers who would like to speak, 515-605-9891, press 1 to raise your hand. Sir.
Yes, Cheryl, I think we have
Jamila. Who should we on the line first thing? Which line?
Let's go with Jamila. Jamila first.
Which one? Which one? Last 4 digits.
919-559.
Ms. Jamila, you're on the live on
yes.
The air.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon, Jamila. Thank you so much for joining us. We have a bone to pick with your younger brother. We'll deal with that later on. But thank you for joining us. I want to just introduce you properly. Jamila Marie Alamein Hayes is currently a doctoral student in civil engineering at North Carolina State University. And she has been involved in civil engineering for decades, in fact, and decided to pursue a doctoral degree in that area. She attended Morgan State for her first degree in civil engineering and then the American University in Washington, D.C. to get her master's, and then got certified to sign her own drawings, as they say, an architect, but it's actually plans, and specialized in building bridges for a while in the state of North Carolina, and then moved into D.C. with a group called ASHTO, and their responsibility is quite large. They were the ones who have to give the green light for any kind of transportational changes from the air to the sea to the highways. They have to agree to the specs, and that was the job of ASHTO. She worked there for about 10 to 12 years. So she brings to us a wealth of experience in civil engineering, but I would like for her to comment on how she sees her career choice has been impacted through civil engagement. And I'll turn it over to you, Jamila, in that regard. Thank you again for joining AM 360.
No problem. Thank you. Yes, I was listening to a little bit of what was just said with the caller before me. And honestly, one of the reasons why I went back to school to get my PhD was because there is a lack of diversity in my field, civil engineering. Well, that can honestly be said for all of engineering. There's just not a lot of diversity, period. And I was at a point in my career where I felt like I could do something about that. And so by my going back to school to get my PhD in engineering, I hope to one day be able to educate the next generation of civil engineers, because there is a significant push right now, over the last couple of years, actually, to diversify the engineering workforce, not only engineering, but the science workforce, technology, engineering, and math workforce, commonly known as the STEM workforce, because so many of our jobs are going in that direction, and so many of the employers that have those types of jobs are looking for people to meet those needs, and there's just a lack of people to meet those seats, and it's just not enough, particularly they're looking for African-Americans, other minorities, women, because most of the time, historically, those fields have been mostly Caucasian men, and it's just not enough of them to go around. And so I'm hoping with this degree to be able to encourage and to inspire and to educate other minority students and or women to come and take a place with me in this STEM field. So I'm very passionate about that. I didn't realize what a kind of a unicorn I have been. I've had such a great career. I enjoy being a civil engineer. It's been something I've wanted to do since I was a very young girl. I was exposed to it early in my life. And as my father said, I've designed bridges in North Carolina. I've planned national transportation projects through my last employer. But now I'm looking to kind of give back to the community and do what I can do to help the next generation of civil engineers to be a little bit more diverse.
Can I ask you a question? In fact, I can have a couple. But what advice would you offer to high school and college students who might be exploring or engaged in career planning? What kind of civic engagement activity will help them to maybe get an idea that what field they want to go into, whether it's engineering or computer coding? Can you draw from your experience or people that you know of civic engagement activities that helped you to see that engineering was for you? You said you were interested at a very young age.
Yes, I actually was very fortunate because I got to participate in a summer program when I was in middle school, and it was through a university. And that particular summer program exposed young girls of all walks of life to all types of fields in civil, in science and engineering, period. So we had women come to us who were engineers. We had women who come to us who worked we had a weather forecaster come. We had a woman who came as a marine biologist. And so these women just came and shared their experiences with that, with myself and the rest of the students there. And they had us do different activities, and we went on little field trips. And so that really opened my eyes to the possibilities that you typically don't know that are out there just going through, you know, traditional everyday at school and with your school counselors. So my main, I guess, recommendation would just to be involved in the community and to see what the community offers you, because there are a lot of outreach opportunities out there now, particularly for students who are interested in pursuing careers in STEM and or have never been exposed to it. So through your universities, the local universities, community colleges, sometimes even local businesses have outreach days. So if students get the opportunity to kind of take advantage of those things, they could at least get a peek into what we do as a STEM practitioner. And sometimes those programs can be a week long. They can be 2 weeks long. It just really depends on what the program is focused on. But for me, that was how I got introduced to it, and it certainly made a world of a difference in what I chose to do as a career.
And can I get another follow-up question with that? You mentioned the shortage in diverse candidates for these positions in the STEM field, but I want to get a sense from you, thoughts, if you have them. You may not, but with this whole current debate around AI, artificial intelligence, do you see, have you experienced, or do you think in the future AI will impact the engineering field? And if so, are we properly preparing our students in the science and in the coding area to be able to take on these careers that might be impacted by the advancement of technology?
So when you say AI, are you referring to advancement of technology or as opposed to artificial intelligence?
No, I'm when I say AI, I'm talking about artificial intelligence, but I'm also including artificial intelligence as an example of how technology is advancing so rapidly. And I'm wondering, especially coming out of the pandemic, are our students going to be able to qualify in the science field?
No, that's a great question. That's a really big question. I can just offer my little 2 cents on it. I do think that AI will definitely impact civil engineering, like it was going to impact a lot of different fields out there, particularly in the STEM fields. How that's going to look, we have yet to know. I do not know yet. I do not think personally that the students are ready yet for that. And it's not because they're not ready. I don't think the educators are ready yet. So it's got to be a two-way, you know, street to kind of prepare everyone. Mm-hmm. And sometimes technology is moving so fast, it's hard to keep pace with it. And that's for everyone. So certainly for the educators to be able to properly prepare the students for something like an AI type of technology that's already out there and so heavily saturated in so many different fields, it's just difficult to measure when that's going to kind of balance these scales out, you know, in terms of them being ready to adequately prepare the students when the students are adequately prepared to go out into the workforce using that technology. But even as I pursue my PhD, there's ChatGPT, you know, where students are using those resources to do their online summary, not some admissions letters, you know, and admission statements. And so AI is everywhere. And I think it's very important for us to know what it is and to know how to use it properly, because it has a lot of pros and cons to it. And it definitely is not going anywhere. It's here to stay. So we have to adjust, as we've had before, to technology and the pros and cons that come along with all this great technology.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one parallel you could think of in terms of technology, you know, I'm a young 71, but I remember when we did not have the use of smartphones not too long ago. But now every person you see or every other person has a smartphone in their hand, and they rely on that for so much of their life, whether it's scheduling trips, scheduling dinners, social events, et cetera. But that technology also has another side to it. And there's been several reports recently on how giving your kids exposure to that little device for too many hours has a negative impact on their self-esteem. So another example of how we have to really gauge how we use the technology for the benefit of our, and be aware of both the good and the potential bad in those kind of activities, especially as elongated with STEM. I was hoping that Abraham would come on board because he does coding for some major companies and the Denver, Colorado area, and that's his whole profession. And he might have had a little bit more crisp insight into that, but God willing, we'll get him. I mean that in two ways, too. But we'll hopefully get exposed to his brilliance as well in a very near future. Jameel, I didn't mean to cut you off, but, you know, that just came to mind on how we have already experienced that to a great degree, even today.
No, that's so true. And it's I'm a mother myself, and I'm always concerned about how long I let my children, you know, get on these iPads and do these different devices. And it's a real concern, and it's a legitimate reason to be nervous about it, not just the technology itself or what they're exposed to on the technology devices. It's the children don't really have the option to be innocent like they used to, even when I was a child. You know, there's just so many things out there that are trying to take the innocence away from them. And so it's important for me as a parent to try to protect that innocence for as long as I can, because children grow up way too fast now because they have access to way too much information that we just didn't have when I was younger. So. But another aspect of technology
ask a question.
As well.
I wanted to springboard from the question that Sister Amatala asked earlier. Good morning. Thank you for joining the show. I spent the weekend, the last 3 days, there was a group of us who had, it was a whirlwind visit through the Colorado River in three states, Nevada, Arizona, and Southern California in the desert, looking at Hoover Dam and Lake Mead and the Colorado River and Lake Powell and some of the technological just wonders and the technology is 90 years old. So looking at what the engineering marvels from 1930. So there was no AI. The only intelligence was human intelligence. So that intelligence, in just the wherewithal, rivals to me is it goes back to the Aztecs and the Egyptians, right? That kind of architecture and that kind of engineering. So yes, there are opportunities. As a scientist, I know there were opportunities that I was provided to sit in a biochemistry lab, and I fell in love with it. But a lot of the students don't know what they don't know, and they don't know to reach out. And if there's not someone there to guide you, as Sister Makala was asking about what kind of advice, if they're not in a school district where someone is providing them guidance and opportunity or having, you know, career days, they don't have the exposure to knowing that, oh, I love, you know, this science. What can we do to bring this to them? I'm in WISE, Women in Engineering and Science, and I presume you are too. But what can we do to help them fall in love with, you know, science and engineering before they even know that they can fall in love with science and engineering? You understand my question? Because they don't know.
Yes. And so, I know particularly
so
for girls, we tend to.
Not there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great.
That is an issue we are still trying to work on, and we need help from all types of resources to continue to get students exposed to it, because it's those students sometimes that can be the brightest. They just don't know it yet, you know. So it is something I've worked with a group recently through NC State. That's where I'm in school at. It was actually a grant program we've worked on, and it was in a county, Alamance County, North Carolina, and it was a specific grant that was written to involve both Elon University, Alamance County Community College, and as well as some of the schools that are local schools from elementary to middle school, to create this network of opportunities for students, young students, to get exposed to those things. So it didn't, like you said, it's very difficult to have that outreach. You have to do better by getting that outreach, and how to do that outreach is a big thing now. It's definitely important also to have a support system, like you mentioned before as well, either at home or at school, for kids who just don't know. They don't know what they don't know. So luckily, I think that's one way technology can help us, because if we can get them to kind of get online and just Google a few things, it'll pop up, populate potentially more potential resources for them than, you know, say 20 years ago we had to, like, do hand paper items and things like that. But it's something that we can still do better at, and it's something that still needs to be improved upon, because it's just not enough resources to really kind of, you know, touch base with a lot of different school systems. But starting with the school system and starting with the community as I would recommend being the best way to kind of start, to try to, you know, expose more students to the opportunities that are out there. And I know guidance counselors are particularly overwhelmed as it is, but they also can be a resource. But we do need to do better and try to get more exposure for students. And I did want to say one thing, just while you had mentioned the technology of, like, the Hoover Dam, because I've been out there several times, and I think it's fascinating. If you compare that to today, they actually have homes that are being built in Texas, I believe was the first state who did it, completely by 3D printers. So you go from, you know, the olden days of the 1930s, you know, the pulley system for getting those barrels of concrete up there or buckets of concrete up there to pour that dam, to today where they're getting complete homes constructed and built and ready to move in by basically a printer. So there's just so much that has been done with technology, and there's so many things that can still be done for the future, you know, but we've got to have enough people and the right people interested in, and knowledgeable about these great technologies.
Yes, and the last thing I want to, I would just encourage, especially in you're at the college, and anybody else who's listening who's in a position to do it, I know I'm doing it as much as I can when I go to the schools, encourage as many teachers and students to take classes in public speaking, because as you know, Ms. Jamila, scientists tend to be very insular and not want to speak so much in public. And particularly girls, black and brown girls, need to see us. You know, in Spanish, si puedes verla, puedes verla. If you can see her, you can be her. And if they can see and they can hear, they, you know, you can't be so insular as a scientist or an engineer. And they need to see us at the science fairs, at the school, what do you call those days?
The career days.
And not just the loud, you know, the exciting ones. We need to make it exciting so that they want to be a part of the industry. And, you know, I think that's what's most important, because they don't usually see, you know, they see the presentation and it's a PowerPoint and it's very monotone. It's not exciting.
Right.
My son saw an engineer at his school talk about civil engineering, and he brought a sample of the Bay Bridge. And that's what got him excited about going to Morehouse and majoring in civil engineering. But it was that model, and it was the one before the earthquake and afterwards. But I think we have to be more in front, and we have to push it. I was like, how did you? I never said anything to him about civil engineering. He came up with it. But it was because of the career day. So I think it's also really important that we reach out.
And you're right.
I don't think they would know it.
Mm-hmm. We have to definitely make it at their level and get their interest. So if we don't get their interest, they pretty much have, you know, moved on from us. And it's difficult for civil engineering because it's not one of the more technically savvy, you know, jobs right now, particularly when I talk to young college students. Very few of them are majoring in civil engineering. That's why it's a shortage, because they just don't find the infrastructure as interesting as some of the other cooler types of engineers. But at the end of the day, we still need roads and bridges, and we still need buildings and clean water. So, but there's a certain way you have to present that information and those opportunities to students to get their interest right out the bat, which is very important.
Yes. When we start young, we need to start them young. Start them in third grade.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
no, I love it. Thank you. I love it. I love it.
And Jamila, would you share your experience as fourth or fifth grader when you made a bridge out of toothpicks or popsicles and at University of Southern Mississippi? Which one did you use to make that first bridge or the construction? Just share that.
Sure, yes. Yes, that was actually there. I was actually in sixth grade. That particular program was okay. for middle school students. But yes, and that was the program I was talking about earlier, where they introduced us to a lot of different careers from women. But the one that stuck with me, obviously, was the one time we had an engineer come, and she had us actually design and build a bridge out of toothpicks and glue. And we worked in a team, and they gave us all of our raw materials, you know, being cardboard and glue and the toothpicks themselves. And we had to have the bridge had to weigh a certain amount, had to be able to hold a certain amount. We had a budget we had to adhere to. And so that whole experience actually stayed with me and was the reason why I became a civil engineer. And I actually kept that bridge for a very, very long time. Years later, until one of my brothers broke it by accident, just sibling rivalry. But our bridge actually won. We won that competition. Yeah. That was the particular activity that we did. It just got me hooked. And like I said, I was about 12 years old then, and from that time, I knew I wanted to be a bridge designer, and that's exactly what I went and did with my life. And I have, as my father said, designed several bridges here in North Carolina when I worked here for the Department of Transportation.
Oh, that's nice. Love it.
Well, Sister Cheryl, would you check the board to see if there's some other people that have called in? I know Jamila has some other things she's got to do, but I want to give her a chance to make any kind of closing comments before we go to the next guest, if they're on the line.
Yes, we do have one hand that's raised. 503-705. I think that's
okay.
Mayor Mikhail. There you go. You have a question or a comment? 503-705.
You are on the air.
Your hand is raised.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Okay, very good. Thank
you.
I should have been
able to. Go ahead. Well, like
my phone.
In the area of civic engagement, that's integral to our community construct as members of the community of Imam Wadafi Muhammad. That has been something that I have personally engaged in since being encouraged by him to do so. Through the interfaith platforms, which, you know, I continue to do to this day. And on the area, the very vital area of advancing into technologies, it's interesting, Sister Amatola, I brought together a group of young men about a month ago to discuss AI, all of them in the technical field, all Muslims, to discuss AI, its impact, and how we can get ahead of it and benefit from it. And just as was pointed out, watch out for the things that we need to be careful about in terms of how it's being used or misused. On the listening to the sister who's an engineer, it really got my attention and caused me to want to engage in this conversation. I'm a plumber. I've been a plumber for well over 50 years and just retired my license this year, because I am no longer physically engaged. I've come up through the ranks as a plumber, a business owner, a city inspector, senior inspector. So I'm very familiar with the width and breadth of plumbing. And over the years, I've watched the progression of the task, the materials, the applications, the sciences that are applied, and there it's tremendous. It's very scientific endeavors, but it's so crucial and that our young people are encouraged, as has been stated, to engage in that level and at all levels, because the engineer can draw it up. The architects and engineers can put it all together, but someone's got to do it. Someone's got to actually physically make these things happen. And this is an area that could secure economically the future of many young men and women because of the dollar amount that's connected to it and the necessity of having those trades and those skills. What I've done to back up my speech is I've recently am in the process of establishing a nonprofit entity another nonprofit entity along with others that I have, and it's called ACATI, the African American Cultural and Technical Training Institute. And that is to tie, its design is to tie the technologies, what we call it in Oregon a CTE, Career Technical Education. Lots of funding out for the putting up college-level institutions to attract people into the trades. And ACATI's strategy is to connect our history as builders and craftspeople to our future, going back and showing our history and then encouraging and laying out the path. Many young brothers and sisters I've spoken to over the years were interested, but they only could see the end product and not the entry. How do I get in? What do I have to do? As you asked Sister Amatala, the sister, about what people should be doing. So that's what ACATI is set up to do. And I consider that a civic engagement activity. I've got a building, I've got all the things in place, building the board, et cetera. My daughter is a master builder in Boston. My brothers are electricians. So we have a wealth of knowledge that needs to be passed on. I'm like the brother who's host. I'm a young 71. Okay, so I'm done with the physical task, but I need to get rid of or pass on my knowledge. And that's what ACATI is set up to do. So thank you for giving me a moment to get this off my chest, if you will. Thank you very much.
So, Brother Iman, before you go, because the program is recorded and it will be online, if someone wants to contact you or contact ACATI, how would they do that?
Well, they can call me direct at 503-705-5300. That's 503-705-5300. Or if they choose to email, they can email me at imamaglobal.com. That's I-M-A-M-A-A, imamaglobal.com.
That's the website?
My master foundation, I call it. That's actually an email address.
But there wasn't
any at Imama Global. I'm sorry, at imamaglobal.com.
Okay. All right. Alhamdulillah. Thank you, Imam. That's Imam Mikhail Shabazz from Oregon. And thank you for dialing in, supporting the program, and for your comment. That's really important information. And I do know that Imam Shabazz is very, very, very active there in his community, like you said, using the interfaith platform to strengthen our ties with other organizations in their community and also to get governmental support in some areas too. So
absolutely.
The work that he's doing there is definitely a great model for us to look at and to try and replicate it throughout the country, inshallah, God willing. I did have a question.
Sure.
I did have a question for Sister Jamila, just for our audience, because you said you built bridges and you mentioned roads and this. Can you tell us major career points or activities that a civil engineer engages in? Maybe there's a student in our listening audience or will be in our listening audience or a parent. What are some, because Cheryl mentioned earlier, students don't know what they don't know. And yes, those career days are important. What about in those areas where the schools are not having those career days, what kind of information can we put out there or resources or organizations for a person to find out what does a civil engineer do?
Honestly, I would probably have to, if they don't have those resources there in the community, which a lot of communities don't have them, it would be a little bit challenging to find that out, simply because they might not have it, you know, available to them. But people can always go online and just Google civil engineering, or they can go online and Google, you know, STEM resources in their particular area. And that should at least give them a starting point to find opportunities in those particular communities. If the students are on, or, you know, listening in, or their parents are listening in, if they can't find resources through their school or through their student schools, I would certainly try to go go online next and just get an initial, you know, start. That's not going to give you an in-depth, you know, response, but it would at least get you hopefully down a path to get the resources that you're looking for. Because I was similar to the other caller. I did not know what civil engineering was either until I went to that particular program that summer. I had no idea what engineers did, and it wasn't until I went to that program that I really learned what they did. So knowing how to get access to those programs and get access to those resources is very, very important. And an initial start, if it's not through their school, would definitely just to be to kind of Google it on the Internet.
Okay.
I would add, we do have, like, NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers, which is good. I mean, they are active in some – they're not as active as I would like them to be, but NSBE is good. And, again, you have Women in Engineering and Science, WISE, or BWISE, which is Black Women in Engineering and Science. But, yeah, the hardest part is what these engineers are saying, you know, is that we the proactivity, especially at schools, is just not there a lot of times. So it's hard for students to know. On my board, I spend a lot of time just making sure that there's apprenticeships that are available, whether they want to be a scientist or an engineer, but also making sure that the apprenticeships are there for, as the ma'am just said, making sure that the contractors are giving opportunities to participate. We have a $90 million project going on right now to rebuild the treatment plant. And so the contractor has an obligation to fulfill many of those positions with local contractors and also local hires. So I think that, the architect, the engineer, and the administration team, all of it has to be there, but we do have to have somebody to build it. So we also need contractors who are going to be in the civil realm. So I think he's right on point on that part. We also need people who are going to be, you know, architectural contractors. Because there's a lot of money in that, and we tend to not know how to navigate those waters as well. And Lisa Jamila just said, building the bridges. She didn't go out there and build that bridge herself, but she was responsible for making sure that it's built the right way.
Another resource too might be a local community college or university. A lot of programs now are down through the colleges. And so someone just Googles, outreach programs or STEM outreach programs through the university, there's a very good chance they have at least one program where they're trying to get people from the community on their campus to introduce them to some type of STEM activity. Even here in North Carolina, where I'm located at, NC State has several summer programs for students as young as, you know, third grade. So if the other options don't work out, there's always there's a good chance that college, a local college or a community college, has also an outreach program. And in terms of the lady was talking about a minute ago too, civil engineering is not just design. A lot of people have that misconception. There's also the maintenance engineers, like they're talking about. So you have to design and build it and maintain it. You know, all those things are needed. They're very critical pieces. Each one is just as important as the next. So there's room for everyone to have, you know, a piece of this opportunity. And like the person who spoke earlier about the plumbing industry, it's a very lucrative field. If you want to make good money and do something, you know, that you enjoy doing, you can make a good salary in any aspect of these types of jobs. So
absolutely. Because one thing's for sure, all of us don't need a toilet.
Absolutely. Every day, at least once a day. But let me just make another contribution if I could. There's ANC State University. ANT State University, one of the largest HBCUs we have in the country. They produce most of the engineers we have in our community, and they have a wealth of programs in the summer. Again, that's ANT State University in Greensboro, North Carolina, where the sit-in sort of jumped off at. But I happen to know the chancellor over there. We were in high school together. And they're looking always to go into the lower grades to get students involved in the STEM programs. So go to Google, Google up ANT State University, and go into the enter the science programs they have, and they have all of them for the most part, building sciences, you name it, all the way to the farming industry, a very good resource for you to have. And also include the following, too. You know, a lot of times we're trying to assess what is the interest of our children. There are programs out there that can sort of give you an idea of what their skill sets are naturally. For example, there's a book called The Seven Intelligences, where you can take the time to inventory how your child learns. You know, some of us are not pencil and paper people. Some of us are more rhythmic. We got to move around a little bit. Some of us have a drawing capabilities. But there are seven ways to measure basic cognitive intelligence. So if you take the time to do that, you can sort of direct their learning process as they go through elementary school, et cetera, to insist that indeed those lesson plans incorporate some of these methodologies that will benefit your student or your child in that case. But take the time to do that, do a little research, because that might give you a little jump start on what your interest might be for your student or, pardon me, for your child. And then you can direct them with programs, et cetera, to pursue and fine-tune that interest level into a potential career. I was going to say another example of civic engagement, and I'll let the turn the mic loose. You know, we just built in Forsyth County a brand-new courthouse right beside the government center. It was a $120 million project. The point is that when the bids first came in, one young man came to me and said, Mr. Alamein, we didn't get a chance to make a second bid offer like the other people. They had models of what the courthouse would look like. We need another chance to present our options. And so we debated it, and I said, well, listen, let's give them the same chance the other ones got because they didn't bring the model with them. Long story short, they got the bid. They're building a building. It's almost complete now. But as a part of that agreement, there were some specs that we identified that had to be met. Utilizing what's called underutilized companies, primarily us, in the construction part of that building, and making sure that local people had an opportunity to work on the project. And there were some other criteria we put into it, but involving as many people as possible from the community with those skill sets. That's the result of civic engagement on a specific project. And that's one of many. We could go into a lot of other ones, but you need to have someone there concerned about your interests, promoting your interests, and making sure that we're at the table when they first put the menu out in a metaphorical sense. Okay, I've talked long enough. I want to thank Jamila. Yes, ma'am.
Let me ask you this question on that example you just gave. The young man came to you. What position were you in for him to come to you?
I was county commissioner then.
Okay, so county commissioner. And so it's important, trying to take this through line to civic engagement, it's important for us as individuals, organizations, faith-based entities to have the connection with the people who are in elected positions to be able to go to them to make sure that our interests are being met. Would you agree?
Yes, sir. 100%.
Okay. Thank you.
And the other side of it is holding those people accountable, too. We have to do both. Get them in the chair and by all means hold them accountable. And that has many merits, especially when it comes to really serving the community needs, not just self-serving needs. And we're in that posture right now dealing with some elected officials who won't even respond to a telephone call, not to mention coming out to a meeting. So we're going to hold them accountable in this next election. So we have to do that. That's part of our responsibility, too. Hold your elected officials responsible, hold them accountable, but also be in the process yourself. You know, take the courage to run for an office, or at least get in someone's campaign to see how that whole process works. If you don't have that kind of time, you know, get involved in perhaps some kind of format of some sort to see who these people are who are coming around asking for your vote. at least involved on some level to show them that you have an interest that they need to address as they go forward making decisions that could directly impact your quality of life. All right, any other hands raised on the board at this point?
Okay. Yeah, we just need to take a very quick break. We'll take a very quick break and we'll come right back.
All right.
Thank you.
Peace be with you and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and Instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Pitzer as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you and have a pleasant day.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're going to go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you going to do? You're going to go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You got to dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. No, you won't. Because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi. I'm Sebastian Maniscalco, and my grandfather passed away from Alzheimer's disease in 2005. The Alzheimer's Foundation of America is a national nonprofit agency that's here to help. If you or someone you love has questions about the disease, need someone to talk to, pick up the phone. Call Alzheimer's Foundation of America. Don't be embarrassed. They're here to help you. Call 866-232-8484. Don't forget.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting The Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
And you're back, sir. Live.
And so we're looking at the third part of our program theme for today. That is the future of civic engagement. What does it look like? How will it impact our lives and our potential careers going forward? And I think the future, to a great degree, is now. If we look at the environment we're dealing with right now when it comes to the political environment, the future is now. So we've got to really be engaged in this process if we want to impact our future existence in this country. And I mean on a very serious level, because there are those elements out there that are doing all they can to suppress your voice, to suppress your vote, to suppress your opportunity to even study about your own history in this country and the other elements evolving too, to try to put us back into almost counting jelly beans for who are allowed to vote. I was reading an article this morning about the number of colleges we have in North Carolina, for example. Quite a few. We have 10 HBCUs in North Carolina, not to mention the large university systems like UNC, North Carolina State, you know, et cetera. But they're trying to pass a bill now, but they will not accept college ID as proof of your right to identify yourself when it comes to voting. And that's intentionally designed to suppress youth, specifically college students, from voting. So we're engaged now in trying to challenge that. But that's a small example. I'm sure if you look at your state situation, pay close attention to what they're doing with voting rights in your state. And what are they trying to do to either decrease the population of voters or encourage the population to vote? In most cases, these states are following one trend of thought: reduce the voters so that minority of people can control the majority. That's really the bottom line through all the strategies they're trying to implement. And it's a power struggle. There's already a lot of data out there. By the year 2050, this country's demographics will not favor European Americans. And so there are elements working to do all they can to control that, to counter that, and to come with these, I call almost demonic rules and policies to insist that they maintain control. But I have faith, like most of us on this line, that they're not in charge. Final decision will be made by a high authority. We're going to fight along with that authority to make sure everyone has access to this process going forward. But any comments you'd like to make on the future civic engagement, feel free to do so, because our program is getting close to the time we have to cut off, unfortunately. I'll open it up for discussion.
I think that you have made, you've set the tone for discussion on this issue. Can you give us, since you're very directly involved with the program that is being sponsored by the U.S. Coalition of Muslim Organizations for the Muslim Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill, which is next week, next Monday and Tuesday, the 12th and the 13th, where it might be too late for people to sign up to actually go to Capitol Hill, Brother Fleming. Is there another way that members from our audience or from our community can participate in making this day effective? Can they do it by calling in to their representatives, or what suggestions would you have as far as that?
Okay, two things. It's not too late to sign up if you want to be a delegate. That's number one. Second, a lot of the organizations like CARE, C-A-I-R, they have chapters that sort of support this effort for the last 8 years. So if you have a local CARE chapter, you can go through them to voice your concerns or your issues, and it'll be given to us that on the National Coordinating Committee. Greg, we're having a meeting on the 7th to fine-tune our last ask that we'll be having on in D.C. So you can go through the CARE organization. ISNA is also involved, if you're familiar with how they're structured. And, of course, you have ACGG. We have a list of concerns that we've also included in this year's program for the first time. So they're going to present our issues as well as the others that are filtering up through that process. But feel free to go online to, you know, United States, Congress of Muslim Organizations. There is a website there. There's a telephone number. Robert McCraw has sort of coordinated the legislative part of that. This young man by the name of Usman is the guy who sort of funds the effort nationally. And you can also leave information there that you have a concern about. And that way it'll come straight to us. And by us, I mean those that are planning this whole effort next week in D.C. So you can still sign up as a delegate if you want to come. I'm trying to find some more resources to help pay for housing. That's still in process. There's no cost, you know, in terms of you signing up as a delegate. There's no cost you contacting your local CARE chapter and letting them know what your concerns might be. And we've done about 125 surveys so far on our effort. We've got a, CR code? I think that's what it's called. You know, we take a picture, it goes straight to the survey, you fill it out. Yes, thank you very much. And so we collected quite a bit of data the last 3 days from that effort. We had a Mid-Atlantic regional meeting for the moms that was tied into the National Muslim Business Conference that they had in Greensboro. And we got quite a few responses from that effort through the code. So we're taking some of that data also, fine-tuning it to present some of those issues also in D.C. And then you can go straight to the website of ACGG if you'd like to make a comment. And that website is www.AmericanCoalitionForGoodGovernment.org and leave your comment there. And that way I can get it or some of the other officers can get it and make that a part of our discussion. Again, that website is www.AmericanCoalitionForGoodGovernment.org. Those are three ways specifically you can contact us about your concerns. Or you can call me directly at 336-575-0895, and I'll make sure your voice is heard in Washington, D.C.
Fantastic. Let me ask you this one question regarding that. This is the eighth year, I believe, for the Muslim advocacy. Have they been able to see where their efforts have, you know, pushed the needle a little bit or a lot in certain areas of that they've asked for? Brother Fleming?
Yes, ma'am. They do an assessment. For example, there are specific bills that we'll be addressing that we want to either not support or support, and then we give them data to support our position. So on the second or third day of the conference, we'll go back and look at what kind of responses we got from them. You ask for a response while you're in the office. You ask for a commitment while you're in the office. And then you follow up to see how they voted on that specific bill, for example. And there's been pretty good response thus far. That's why we've been going back. It makes a world of difference to be in someone's office, presenting to them a concern and a solution, and holding them accountable to respond back to you. Now, there are some very conservative people we've talked to over the years who will be very polite, take the information. You call them back and they haven't had time to address that issue because they're so busy. But you don't let that dissuade you. You just keep going because we try to maximize the effort. As I said, we have about 325 delegates that have signed up so far. And I'm pretty sure by next week it will mushroom. People like to wait to the last minute for some reason. We're trying to get 800 people signed up this year. So that's the goal. But we do make a big difference. We were the ones who were behind this Islamophobia bill being passed, along with the support of our brother from New Jersey, the senator from that chorus, Senator Booker, and some others also got on board. And there's some other examples too, but yes, to answer your question, it makes a difference. It makes a difference to be there in their office and not just sending them an email or a letter.
Good. Thank you. And so we should.
And I have to.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I've got to fly back into D.C. on the 19th, 20th, and 21st for another group, the Poor People's Campaign Congress, that's organized by Repair the Breach by Dr. Barber. And that organization actually pays you for your transportation, pays you for your food and your housing. So I'm on the planning committee too. So I'll be doing the same thing twice in D.C. inshallah, same kind of format.
I'm really nice. So we encourage people to support this effort. This is something that we've seen some real live results. So inshallah. And then also commit that when your congressperson or your senator, when they're back in their home offices and not in D.C., make an appointment to go in and see them there to express your interest, to let them know that you're holding them accountable and you expect results from them representing your interests in the Congress.
Yes, ma'am. And I remind them always, the first word of the Constitution is we, not I.
Right.
It should be a we concept, not an I concept. So we are the
right
people.
And the
they
revolution
represent
will not
you
broadcast on TV.
No.
Will
no.
Not be television.
And with that, we want to thank all of our guests today. And we're going to look forward to next week. You got about 30 seconds. Sister Amata, what's happening next week?
Next week,
what
I
are we looking forward to next week?
Inshallah, we'll have Dr. Hatem Bazian, and we're going to be talking about Palestine.
Alhamdulillah. With that, we thank everyone. We wish you a great Monday and a blessed rest of your week, productive week, a civically engaged week. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, a blessed day, and inshallah, we will see you back here next week, same time, same channel, and stay tuned. And there's some great health field programs coming up right after this. Have a great day. Inshallah.
All right. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.